The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Today FM.
It all happens here.
We're going to start with Daniel McConnell, political editor of the Irish Examiner, because what is the situation with PCR tests at the moment? Is it that there aren't enough physical tests or aren't enough testers? Because we're hearing reports of people having to wait days before they can go and take their test.
Yeah, it's a very real problem, Matt, and we've been monitoring this very closely now over the last week or so. It began, I think, you know, in the Munster area where we were noticing, and colleagues of mine were noticing that, you know, access to antigen or PCR testing, the HSE's PCR testing regime, you know, you were up to 48 hours waiting before you could get one. Now we know that this is now a national problem, and people, as I think Duncan Smith in the Dáil Chamber earlier on today made it clear, that people are essentially logging on at midnight now to book their test because they're just not available when they wake up in the morning. The Taoiseach did acknowledge there is a significant pressure on the system. Additional capacity has been brought in. They're buying in private companies to kind of weigh in and help the effort as well. But I do think, given the surge that's out there at the moment, you know, they suspended the walk-in appointments a number of weeks ago. That was a clear sign that the system was coming under pressure. We're now at the stage where people, rather than being able to get a test within 24 hours, they're now waiting up to 48 hours to get a test.
And sorry, will they then get a test at all? Which then brings into doubt whether the figures being reported are actually the true number.
Well, that was the point I was just about to make. I mean, given if people are going to face into a lengthy wait, you know, and you know they're supposed to stay at home and isolate their movements or restrict their movements at least while they're waiting to get their test. If people are waiting that length of time to get the test and then possibly another 48 hours before they get the result, a lot of people, I'm sure, are going to say, listen, to hell with that, and they'll go on about their business. And that obviously brings its own dangers and consequences.
And yet at the same time, the Chief Medical Officer, Tony Holohan, is telling us not to use antigen tests if we're showing any symptoms, that you have to get a PCR test.
Yeah, so the government has been very annoyed in recent days and weeks about the confused messaging. Certain people within government have been confused around, or have been annoyed about how confusing the messaging has become. What they're now saying very clearly is that if you have any symptoms whatsoever, antigen testing is not for you. Do not go near an antigen test. If you have any symptoms whatsoever, go book yourself a PCR test, which are free. Antigen testing is where when you've no symptoms and you're planning on doing a sort of a high-risk activity, like going to a match, like congregating with family or friends, etc. like that, and it's a kind of it's an early warning system. They are concerned, and Public Health and Tony Holohan have made it absolutely clear, they're not comfortable with the idea of people substituting PCR testing with antigen testing. They just think, you know, they can lead to an awful lot of people making poor decisions. And I do think the government need to kind of step up the information campaign on that. However, a political decision has now been taken by government to roll out antigen testing, or we were led to believe a decision was likely to be taken. A memo was pulled from Stephen Donnie at the last minute this morning. We were briefed last night that it was going to Cabinet. It did not make it to the Cabinet table today. That, to me, is a hallmark of the system dragging its feet. Simon Harris denied that at lunchtime today, but clearly they weren't in a position to sign off on it and bring it to Cabinet.
Sure, what's the rush, Daniel? What's the rush, well, you know, deciding whether they're going to subsidise antigen tests, which can cost anything between 7.50 and 10 euro for an individual test in places I've gone to?
Yeah, but I saw a number of the supermarkets. I saw a couple of tweets today, Matt, with Dunn Stores and other large retailers having them down as cheap as maybe 3 euro or 4 euro. And people are making the point, like, the market may have sorted this out before the Cabinet gets its act together.
Are all antigen tests equal? I mean, are they all of equal value or worth? I mean, some of them may be cheaper, but do they do the job properly?
I don't know. But people have been asking their legitimate question, are there a list of approved antigen tests that the government can sort of point us to? Because, again, for that very quality issue, given the reservations that Tony Holohan and Philip Nolan, who famously referred to them as snake oil devices earlier this year, I mean, there are legitimate concerns. So this is getting, again, it's another mess. It's another sort of problem that the government have had to kind of get over and deal with. And it's one of their own making. I mean, like, literally from last Saturday, we were being briefed very clearly. I think a couple of the Sunday newspapers led on us on Sunday that antigen testing memo was going to Cabinet on Tuesday for it to be pulled at the last minute. Ill behoves the Minister for Health with a question.
Okay, one last thing for you before I go to our other guest. Daniel McConnell, there's loads of rumours flying around on WhatsApp groups and the rest of it about potential lockdown in December. Everything been shut down, pubs and restaurants, and if not quite the lockdown that we experienced during 2020 and early this year, very, very severe restrictions. Are these just rumours flying around the place, or is there anything substantial to them?
there's nothing substantial to them from government. And we have been, because again, I've been getting all these text messages as well, and people saying, oh yeah, listen, we've been told on the 13th of December we're shutting down, end of story. Nothing firm from government. No decision has been taken from government. So I don't know, are these just malicious, you know, scaremongering or people play acting or whatever like that, but they certainly are scaring an awful lot of people and worrying an awful lot of people. Tony Holohan was in a briefing with opposition spokespeople this afternoon and made it clear there's no advice coming from NPHET this week about further restrictions. Now, there's no guarantee that there won't be a further recommendation in 2 or 3 weeks' time if the numbers don't improve. However, I think what they were saying over the weekend very clearly was that we need a slight reduction in our movements in order to kind of get the R number back under one where it needs to be in order to stop the spread of the virus, combined with a booster campaign. And as some minister said to me over the weekend, with Tony Holland scaring the bejesus out of people as well, the combination of all that should have the sufficient impact. If it doesn't, then unfortunately it probably does look like we're going back into some form of another lockdown. However, no politician, certainly in government or on the fringes of government, are saying we're at that point yet. We're just not.
Daniel McCullough, political editor of the Irish Examiner, thank you for joining us. Professor Pete Lunn is with us, head of the ESRI Behavioural Unit. Pete, thanks very much for joining us. If you were to believe the people who are active and commenting on Twitter, you'd think 80-85% of people are totally against the idea of any further restrictions, let alone lockdown. But the social media campaigns, are they reflective of what the detailed, considered opinion polling is finding?
I think it's safe to say, good evening, Matt, that your question contains the answer in its tone. Of course they're not, no. And, you know, anybody who listens to what's circulating on Twitter and thinks it's representative of the population as a whole is making a very, very big mistake, of course.
OK, so what sort of reliable figures do we have to depend upon?
So it is very interesting, actually. So before the Taoiseach made the announcement last week, a week ago today, actually, it was already the case that in answer to a direct question, do you think there should be more restrictions, to a representative sample of the population, these are people we've been tracking throughout the whole pandemic, this work's done by Amoroch, though our own data suggests something similar. So that question, direct question, do you think there should be more restrictions? It was 48% in favour, 38% against. That was the day before the Taoiseach made the announcement. It's actually climbed since, even though there have been a small number of restrictions introduced, as we know. So data out only yesterday from Amoroch, 56% in favour of more restrictions, 33% against. And that's a large representative sample of the population. I also would tell you that our own research that we do with a completely different sample frame would come close to matching that. So I think it's pretty clear there's been a very large swing taking place over around 3 to 4 weeks, in which the public has become substantially more hawkish, and now a majority of them want to see more restrictions.
A majority do, but doesn't it also imply that there's quite a divided society, and that for all of the people who might almost decide to restrict themselves and their actions, there's a significant number who are determined to carry on as if we don't really have a problem?
Well, certainly there's a significant minority that don't want to see the imposition of new restrictions. I mean, that's definitely true. How they will behave if that comes to pass is a different matter altogether. And as you were saying only moments ago, I mean, obviously what we're hoping for here is that we see significant change in people's behaviour that manages to get the case numbers down without the imposition of these restrictions. And you're right as well. I mean, there is division here throughout almost all of 2021. Actually, the speed at which the government was lifting restrictions was matched by the population approving, with small minorities thinking it was going a little bit faster, a little bit slow. I mean, actually, the government's lifting of restrictions was very much in tune with public opinion throughout 2021, as it had not been in 2020, where the government were going faster than the public wanted them to on average. Through 2021, they weren't. That has now changed. Now, it's the first time we've seen these divisions start to open up in 2021. And you're right, they're there now.
Are the studies, I mean, obviously we're in a unique situation in that we've never had lockdowns or restrictions imposed for public health reasons in our living memory. But are there studies done as to how people react to the imposition of restrictions on their liberties over a substantial period of time and how they react against that? And I ask you that question because of what we're seeing from continental Europe over recent days.
It's an extremely good question. And the truthful answer is I do not know. I'm not aware of there being studies that would give us some real insight into genuinely how long are publics willing to tolerate the level of imposition on their personal lives that responding to this pandemic has demanded. Now, that said, it does. What we do know is that it does depend on the seriousness of the situation. So what we know is that people will pull together and will make large sacrifices for the public good in circumstances that they genuinely perceive to be an emergency, where they genuinely perceive there to be a big problem. And that's why some of the work that we're doing, where we're measuring the extent to which people are worried and what the components of that worry, that's why some of that work, I think, really matters. So, I mean, what we're seeing is quite a sharp increase in the worry about the virus among the population, and also particularly worry about friends and family and about what's going on in our health service. And I think what it will come down to, what people's tolerance will come down to, is how serious they think the problem they're trying to solve is. Because what the evidence suggests is if they really do think it's an emergency and it's a serious problem, it's remarkable what people will do. But there are going to be a minority, clearly, who are strongly opposed.
Martin at Cork has a great question. I don't know whether you've posed this as part of the surveys. It goes, would love to see the answer to this question. Would you support more restrictions if it led to tax increases and spending cuts to pay for them?
Yeah, that's a good one. Certainly, certainly that's not a question we've asked. You have to be really careful with all of this, though. Throughout the pandemic, there's been an assumption that every time restrictions are imposed, it's economically costly. And actually, there's some pretty good research evidence to suggest that that assumption's not very good. And the reason it's not very good is because if you let infection get out of control, what actually ends up happening is consumers and workers start voting with their feet anyway. So where studies have actually been done about the degree to which there is genuinely a trade-off between the health consequences and the economic consequences, that assumption is actually not very good. And it turns out to be true internationally as well, that it isn't the case that the countries that have been, if you like, most libertarian or most unwilling to impose restrictions have done economically better. In fact, they haven't. And one of the reasons for this is, of course, because if you do that and infection gets completely out of control, it has really unpleasant economic consequences anyway.
Professor Pete Lunn, head of the ESRI Behavioural Unit, thank you as ever for being with us here on The Last Word at Today FM. Some of your comments coming into 0874 100 102. It's very difficult for parents of teenagers who will go out on the weekend if all their friends are going out. I would like to see restrictions for a short period to bring down the numbers. Another one, though, says, I can guarantee you, this is Stephen and Lusk, that the 56% who apparently want more restrictions are those who will not or never will be affected financially by the restrictions. Why would a turkey vote for Christmas?
The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Weekdays from 4:30. Today FM.
When everyone is on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing and context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.